This is an oral history interview with John Tulowitzki conducted by Mark Mundy on Sunday, April the 16th, 1994 at 2:30 p.m. The subject of this interview will be Mr. Tulowitzki's military career from the 1970s, in which he is retired and now currently runs his own computer firm here in the Jacksonville area. John, if you would, just start off telling me a little bit about your background, what brought you up, brought you to the decision to join the military, and the choices you made in getting there.
There wasn't a choice. If there was another option, I'd have never gone in the military. So, but what brought me up to go in, I was raised as a military, what we call military brat, kid as another service member in the military. My father was drafted or joined, I'm not sure which, during the Korean War, went off to Korea, fought as a barman, Brown and automatic rifleman, and he came back from Korea, tried to work in the granite mines of Dakotas, South Dakota, and there wasn't much work there coming back after the Korean War, so he ended up going back into the military. My father and my mother had three girls and three boys. During another tour, after the war was over with, my dad was in Korea, my little brother, he lived in an old rangel shack out in Colorado, and he had gone downstairs to light the coal fire, and while throwing newspapers in, one blew back out of the pot belly stove and caught his t-shirt on fire, and he burned, and he died. This thing led one thing to another, and eventually my parents ended up being divorced, and my dad got custody of all of his kids. So three of the kids went on to stay with my aunt. And back in the 60s, this was in 63, there wasn't a lot of divorce and separation of family, and normally any children of a divorce went with the mother. Well, we stayed with our dad. My dad took us back to the Dakotas while he went back to finish his Korean tour. He came back, got married, ended up, he couldn't take care of five kids, so my three sisters went and stayed with my uncle and aunt, so it was just me and my brother with my dad. We went on to an assignment in Asia, in Thailand, lived in Thailand for 2 years. Came back from Thailand, went to Texas for a year, down at Fort Walters, which is Camp Mineral Wells, back in the 50s and 60s. Primary helicopter training center. Then from there we got reassigned back up to, we went back to South Dakota because my dad had orders to go to Vietnam. And my dad came back from Vietnam and was a totally different person. Wasn't the person I remembered or knew. Highly intelligent, worked from sunup to sundown, invested and just hardworking. But the end result was that he never got along with my dad and anything he did. No time to study in school. I'd been told all my life that I was stupid and wouldn't accomplish anything, wouldn't amount to anything. So there was no future at home. There was no skills for a high school dropout. And I had to get out of that environment that I thought I was in. So I joined the military. So it wasn't a choice, it was an only option available. And it wasn't something that was long thought and planned out. It was an alternative to what I was already doing. But situation being different, background being different, history being different, there's no way I'd have gone in the military. When we left the States in 69 and went to Southeast Asia to live, we came back in 71 and landed in Oakland, California. And I remember military people coming off the airplane and going into the bathroom of the airport, and they would rip their uniforms off and stuff them into trash cans. And I couldn't understand this. I couldn't envision why this was going on. I remember my dad wearing his uniform at home back in the Dakotas and going downtown and everybody talking to him and everybody being proud of an individual that wore a uniform and went out and served his country. But here guys were taking their uniforms off and shoving them in trash cans. And it wasn't until I walked out of the airport and I saw the demonstrations, and I saw military people being called baby killers and being spit on, and balloons of red ink or something simulating blood being thrown at them. And it was a scene that was just unbelievable. And at that time, if that's what this country thought about the military and their armed forces, there's no way I would have gone into the military. So it wasn't so much a choice as an option that seemed better than any other option.
When you joined the military, what was the one of the questions that had been brought up in the past was the racial segregation of the military. During that time, was there still a lot of racial tension? Even though I know you came from a northern area where there wasn't as much as here in the South, but was it a little?
Well, I lived in the Dakotas, and I don't remember, there may have been, but I don't remember any blacks in the small mining town that we lived in the Dakotas. However, as being a military dependent, we've been stationed at military bases all over the world. And so there was blacks in the bigger towns and the bigger cities. And I know there was problems, and there was every school, I don't care if it's white, black, the rich, the poor, the cowboys, the Mexicans, every one of them has their little cliches, little groupings that they get together. And I don't care if it's male, female, or what, everybody's got their groups where they feel comfortable, and people associate together in that comfort group. Maybe I didn't think about it, maybe it didn't dawn on me, but that was just a fact of life. And the fact is, black and white, whatever, was irrelevant. When you're in high school, when you're a little kid, you don't care. You know, you're just out playing and doing your thing. When you're in high school, the only thing you care about is girls. So you can care less about this other stuff over here. And so you don't think about it, it doesn't dawn on you. And we've been exposed to race and different cultures and different people by living all over the world. So it was something that was just a fact of life, and it wasn't thought about much. Now, I joined the military, and it still wasn't thought about much. But years later, after reflecting back on it, you know, the military says that they give everybody a fair chance and everybody has an opportunity. Well, that's garbage. That is the biggest political piece of garbage you ever heard. You get somewhere in the military by a slight amount of what you know, a whole bunch of who you know, and what your ethnic background is. There are set positions, allocations, whether you're black, Spanish, minority, female, and you're going to get those positions based on those, irrelevant of skill and ability, which, in retrospect and thinking back on it, is garbage. The best qualified should go into that position and that job. I.e., I go to a military doctor because I'm not allowed to go see a civilian. I have to go see this military doctor. I don't want the guy that was put in there on an allocation slot because of his ethnic background. I want the best qualified, and you don't have that. If I have to go into a battle and have be ordered to go face a machine gun or walk down a path somewhere that I've never been before, I want the leadership and the best qualified. I care less what he is. Later on in my career, after I got more rank and more senior, one of the things that I would say all the time, all I see is OD green. I don't care if you're female, you're black, Hispanic, I don't care what it is. OD green, that's all you are. I've had females cry in my office because of this or that. I've had grown men cry. I've had complaints. I've seen the camaraderie, I've seen the heartbreak, but it all boils down to everybody is equal in the military in your own little area. But in the big picture, in the big political picture, it's not the same. And we're seeing it all across the country. You're seeing it where you're having different people suing, you're having people filing lawsuits against allocation positions for minorities, you're seeing people that are suing to get into schools because schools hold slots and seats for minorities. And I think allocation of units is not the way to go. It should be based on best qualified. But on the same hand, they say that allocation is based because of past error. Well, how many years do we have to pay for the errors of our ancestors? How many years before the slate is wiped clean and you go forward based on your individual skills? Not to get off track, but...
That's fine. That's part of this interview. What was your... I know it's called an MOS.
Military Occupational Skill.
And upon entering the military, what was your choice?
What do you mean choice? What makes you think there's a choice?
Or what were you assigned when you joined? Or like now, I know you're the eligibility to pick MOS, whether you really get it or not are two different things. But as far as joining the military now, what would...
When you join the military, you take a battery of exams. And those battery exams are called ASVAB. Armed Forces Standard Battery Exam. I don't know what the terminology is exactly. But it's supposed to test your mental ability and your capacity to learn, et cetera, to lead, to accomplish whatever. Based on these skills, they have a recruiter who tries to get military in people. Now, when a recruiter's not out on the streets trying to get civilians in, then he's called a career counselor in the military that tries to take the military people and place them in positions. Now, you're supposed to get a position based on your skill and your ability. However, the command will send down allocation units and say, we need people here, here, and here. So they will try to shuffle people into those positions because they get their pats on the back based on getting people into certain locations. So because the command structure tries to guide people into certain positions, the recruiter who has to work for these bosses or these career counselors tried to shuffle people into here. Later on, these people think, this ain't what the recruiter told me it is. This ain't what I was led to believe this job was going to be. He lied to me. Well, maybe he didn't lie to you, but he didn't tell you the whole truth either. So, do you get what you want? No. Did I care? No. I could have cared less what they did with me. My objective was accomplished. I got out of the environment that I was in. Now, there's a lot more to it than what I'm telling you, but the bottom line is, staying where I was at, I would end up being dead or in jail. So I went into the military, and I could care less what they did with me. Yeah, I told them I wanted to be around aircraft. I wanted to be around airplanes. Well, in combination with my mental aptitude and my physical exam, they said, you're blind in one eye, can't see out the other one. So I said, well, I still want to be around airplanes. And they said, well, we really need you over here in the veterinary services, in the medical field. I said, damn, I'm a high school dropout. I never made it through the 9th grade. And you want me to go into the medical arena? Yeah, I'd do that. So they shipped me off to Chicago. And here I was, just turned 17, I'm in downtown Chicago at Fort Shakey on the Lakey, which is Fort Sheridan, Illinois. And got money in my pocket too? Lord, look out. I hit every club on the river. I partied until the sun came up, and then went back to work and tried to run 2 miles and do the PT and all that stuff and then go to class. I laid my head down and went to sleep. They didn't bother waking me up. They let me sleep all day. Then after about a month of this, they said, you flunking every exam. We're going to send you home. And that was a wake-up call. Because here they're going to send me home to where I don't want to go. And talk about pleading and begging. Don't send me home. Send me to anything. But don't send me home. I've got no home to go to. So I'm back on my kick about being around airplanes. So the colonel that finally let me stay in the military said, well, we'll send you to Terminal Operations Specialist. Terminal? Airplanes? Yeah! I signed the paperwork and they shipped me off to Virginia. I got to Virginia, You normally do your processing on the weekend. You report in on a Friday or Saturday, and of course work starts Monday morning. Monday morning I get up, I get out in front for formation. I don't know nobody there. I don't know where to fall into, which formation to go into, but I just follow everybody else and fall in somewhere. And another drill sergeant, his smoky bear hat and his big mouth says, get on the bus, get on the bus. So I get on the bus, and they drive us down on the other side of the post. I get off the bus, and there's this big boat there. I said, damn, I got on the wrong bus. I'm in trouble now, because this ain't the airfield. I go up to drill sergeant, and I said, I think I got on the wrong bus. And he starts with this boy stuff. Boy, you at the right place. Goes in this list on the clipboard. Said, no, I'm supposed to be terminal operations specialist. I'm supposed to be at the airport. He turned around and said, boy, you see that tower over there? That's the terminal. Now get your ass in that boat. So the first time in my life I found out that they had terminals at docks where the boats are. So I ended up being what I found out later on was a longshoreman loading and unloading ships. That's what I was initially trained. And I passed that course. And then was assigned to a transportation unit with a primary mission. Terminal operations specialist is transfer of cargo from one mode of transportation to another, from truck to train, truck to boat, boat to truck, truck to plane, whatever. And so cargo, which is another word for human labor. Hump that box, boy. And so that's the career I was assigned to, and I did that for two months.